Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, more thanks, Tyson Jack. Sometime our rookie on the board. SMF on the day after Thanksgiving, a shortened day. We're out of here at 12. Well, we're not necessarily out of here, but trading stops at 12:15 for the indices. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 45. All we do is go up in this great, great, beautiful market, as we call it, or whatever we want to call it. But we have Professor Kevin.
Morning, Chief. Yes, we do. I'm just trying to get him unmuted in a second here.
Yeah, unmute thyself.
Futures are not up 7, Chief.
They're
up an unknown because the CME's down.
Well, they're moving.
Not on my screen, they're not. They're still at 7, and the spread is all over the place like they're locked.
Yeah, they claim they have a cooling issue.
The report I saw this morning was that the... there's overheating at the CME's data center, so they have suspended trading.
Well, I have a suggestion this morning. Open the friggin' door.
Ah! No, there's lots of... Hey,
morning, that'll work.
I think in Chicago that would be adequate. Probably here, too. It's like 25.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty here this morning. Snow on the way. We might as well mess up the biggest weekend in O'Hare history. You know, why not? They had a ground stop Wednesday morning with the wind, so let's pour some snow on it. What do you think?
Well, you know, what did I say was going to happen this winter?
Well, you're right so far.
I hope you like snow, right?
Although technically it's not winter yet.
Well, okay, that's a true statement. However, here it comes.
Well, yeah. I know it's not winter yet because I haven't had to call my dog Scruff's old dog walker, because he's a Wiccan, and that's his holiday, the solstice.
He's a Wiccan holiday, huh?
Yeah, well, he's a Jewish dyslexic gay Wiccan. How's that for a... And a dog whisperer on top of it.
Is he demanding his rights?
No, he just wants to... He's walking with a walker these days, but so he can't be doing any dog walking. He still... I think he takes care of a couple of cats in his building or something, but... Interesting character. Dog whisperer, wherever there's such a thing. But it was always funny with him. When he walked the dog, the dog was his client, and then there was the human you had to deal with. And whenever he takes Scruff out, he'd tell me who he ran into and whether he liked the other dog. We ran into Bowser. We liked Bowser. We didn't like Fido so good, you know. The whole write-up every day. It was pretty interesting.
Well, it's important to get the blow-by-blow, so, yeah.
Just sort of, yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, Scruff liked him. But interesting people we have in this world, wouldn't you say?
Always.
Yeah, always. So, what's up with you guys? Good Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Well, you watched some pretty good games.
There were some good games. The oddball thing yesterday is the Chiefs lost and actually moved up in the playoff standings.
Well, and it's still they better
get us. That's because the Ravens were ahead of them, and the Ravens lost a conference game. The Chiefs did not.
Well, it is stunning in the NFL, and these college guys better get used to this if they go ahead with wherever the hell they're going. It's pretty parity. I mean, look at what happens. Cincinnati comes, Jeff Burrow comes back, and all of a sudden they're a team again, right?
Yeah. Well, and that you're right about the parity. You know, that a lot of the a lot of the college guys come out of programs where they win, you know, 10 games or more every year, and only to find out that that's not what life in the real world is like.
Well, we're going to fire every college coach if he loses three games even if they're all playing each other?
Oh, it sort of depends.
What's your guys' over-under on the last time Alabama could play Eastern Illinois? I mean, I don't... If the parents don't stop it, somebody ought to stop it. I mean...
Well, the thing is, the SEC teams do that every year. They, you know, a lot of teams will play a lower division team early in the season as one of their first two or three games. But the SEC teams hold off. Most SEC teams hold off, and the week before their rivalry game, then they play Alabama versus a school like Eastern Illinois, which is in a lower level division. But let me pull up that last week because it was kind of interesting. Let's see.
By the way, Carol, you're right. Are we still stuck on 7 in these futures?
You doubted it?
I didn't know how stuck they were. They said they had a problem. But the Spiders are up 195. Now, that's coming from someplace else. That's coming from the NASD or the NASDAQ, or the New York Stock Exchange. So I believe that. So 0.3%.
Here's last week's SEC schedule. Texas A&M played Samford.
Who are they?
Samford, I believe it's a school, if I remember right, it's in Alabama.
What do you suppose...
Georgia played Charlotte. I don't know what she did to them, but, you know. Oklahoma did play. Alabama played Eastern Illinois. Texas and Arkansas played Tennessee, Florida. Auburn played Mercer. And South Carolina played Coastal Carolina.
Would either of you mavens take the bet that the highest paid player in Alabama makes more than the Eastern Illinois team?
Probably more than the Eastern Illinois team, even if you include the coach.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't see how that's... You don't see the Bears going to play like Mount Carmel or something just for a yuck week. I mean, one's professional and one isn't. What are we doing here? Just ask them, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's a bye game for them. It's basically a scrimmage. It's a practice before, and it's more or less a week off. And you know, so these are the same teams that I will say this with my Notre Dame fan bias, who will complain that Notre Dame doesn't have to play a conference championship game like we do.
Yeah.
Well, you took 2 weeks ago. You took the week off instead. You know. So,
well, so. I used to say that we talk about a wacky story from the past. I used to say that when you play softball, you can't really, unless you line one off the pitcher's head, you really can't, you know, you can get clobbered, but you can't really get hurt. Although we did play this team in the radio league.
They beg to differ. They hate what 16-inch softball does to hands and fingers.
Well, if you don't know what you're doing, yeah. It's somewhere in the radio league the last year, I think the score, one of the major stations, dropped out. So this group that got in there, I don't know how these guys found out about it, but it was a little, how can I say this nicely? It was a geek company. They did video games, and they had some video game. They made a bunch of Dawn, and they were coming out with a new one. They were kind of nice people. They had as much business playing softball as I do being a jockey. I mean, the girls weren't bad. They had a couple girls, but the guys, Kevin, it was, I thought we were going to hurt somebody. I mean, you'd line one to left field, and the kid would let it just hit him right in the chest, like, you know, you get a, like what happened if you, you know, your heart stopped or something. You're like, God, let's get out of here 5 innings before we hurt somebody. And their coach, who was actually a pretty good player, goes, they love it. I got 18 people showing up. They want to be here. Even though they have no idea how to play, they just think it's the best thing they've I go, they're going to get hurt. He goes, I know that. For some reason, they loved it. They'd never played before.
When I worked at Better World Books, it's actually a funny story how this landed, or a mildly amusing story. I don't know if it's actually funny. I was the manager of the very hapless team. And so we get partway through the first year, and it's obvious that this isn't a good team. And I had a conversation with everybody, and I said, if we get in position to get our first win, Do you want me to make sure everybody gets a chance to play? Or do you want me to make sure that we leave our best players in and go ahead and win the damn game? And overwhelmingly, they said, oh, no, we want everybody to get to play.
Well,
so
I get that.
You know, a sport like that, you know, an extracurricular type of sport like that works really well if you have a group of people who are just out there for the recreation and fun. And it works really well if you have a group of people who 100% take it far too seriously and they want it, and it's all about winning and losing. It does not work well if you get a mixed group on that.
Oh, yeah, we want to win. Well, we want to play. Okay, well. But as the years went by, the young ladies got better and better. All of a sudden, you needed somebody. As a matter of fact, our buddy Matt Weber, his lovely bride Jill played the last few years. Before that, he had this, shall we say, other girlfriend. Jill was a better choice, not that it's my call. But the other girl played college ball. So when they broke up, we're sitting at the bar, and one guy goes, well, who do we keep? She's a college second. Now, Matt is a very accomplished center fielder. We go, we can always find another center fielder. I'm like, I think we better keep Matt. Whatever. But it was a choice, you know. How would you like your fate being determined by that? Well, who are we going to go with? Anyway, fun times. What do you guys make of the news? What do you make of the market? News isn't so hot. One National Guard lady died this morning, huh?
Yeah, she did die this morning. She was the one that was shot in the face.
Oh, God. This is
up close. I mean, this was.
We had a couple of people shot in Chicago last night, up close too. People walking down the sidewalk. And this morning, coming in, I came in from Orland, and I would say two or three guys are already. Day after Thanksgiving, of course, maybe some families it would put you on the wrong edge, but a couple of cases of road rage already this morning. Some guy was ready to take on everybody with his pickup truck, and that's it. What's going on? There's no traffic. Relax, will you? What are we doing here? Is it economic? Is it lack of something? I don't know what. It's something wild is going on here. You know, we're talking about immigrants shooting people. Well, people here are shooting people, and everybody seems like they're carrying guns. Everybody's deranged. Everybody's in some cars going fast as they can be. What are we doing? I don't get it. Is it economic? Is it what is the cause of all this?
If I knew, Tom, we'd be solving the problem.
Well,
I got some ideas.
Well, so do I.
I do too. I mean, I don't understand what. I think some of it is long term economics, and we talked. What was I talking to on Wednesday? Where we're, you know, I think the somehow or another, the psychology of this generation not doing as well as the last generations. Economically, and the idea that that things aren't going to be a little better necessarily next month or next year. I don't know that Americans are ready for that. I mean, I don't know what that means. I don't know what the treatment is, but somehow, some way, most people don't think that next year is going to be better. And I don't think I've ever, I mean, we've been around a long time, guys, and I don't ever recall that mentality. Everybody, when we were in high school, college, even before that, well, I had a bum year, but that's all right, next year will be better. Very few people think that now.
Chief, did you see the MTS for October?
The what?
The MTS.
MTS.
For October. MTS. Monthly Treasury.
Yeah.
Right. Did you see it for October?
You got to speak up just a hair, Carl.
I'm sorry.
There you go. Okay. There you go. That's good.
Did you see it for October?
I did not. You usually send it to me, but I did not.
Yeah, well.
Oh, no, I did see them. It's November we haven't seen yet.
Well,
I saw the October.
Hasn't come out yet. Yeah. Did you actually look at it?
We discussed it, I believe. Not at great length, but fill me in.
Okay. So how about these for numbers? All of this in CMS. Okay. By the way, the base increase 18% October over October. And a $284 billion deficit for this one month. All right.
That's a number.
Yeah. By the way, if you want to know where it came from, CMS overall expanded at 34.6%. Supplementary trust fund expenditures, that's physicians and Medicare, up 59%.
Year over year, or not month over
year,
month?
Year over year. This is year over year, October over October. Okay? Because, you know, October is the first month, right, of the fiscal. Hospital spending up by 53%. What do you think Medicare Part D drug expenditures were compared with last year, same month?
I know the contribution per month for most people's doubled since last year.
Doubled?
Yeah. No, by the way, for people.
By the way, the spending rate's 402%.
And I will say that less people have care than last year.
Well, $38 billion in the month of October alone, which annualizes to almost half a trillion, just for drugs. Now, by the way, the only restraint was that the Medicaid block grants were up 4.97, which, but we're told inflation is 3.
I think a lot of people have opted out of the system. They aren't even going to doctors.
Well, they're not opting out. They're forced out.
Well, that's what I meant.
And if you know, as I've pointed out many times in the late 1990s, when I saw this pattern developing and was extraordinarily alarmed by it because it was also driving our double-digit every year increase in insurance, health, it's not
insurance. It never came anywhere near to CPI. We had that going for us.
Well, no, but all the way back in the 1990s, yep. I just ran a quick extrapolation using Excel. Okay.
I didn't have to. All I had to do was ask my brother because we're paying for the PTI.
Well, but I mean, yeah. I just extrapolated it and said it's going to blow up in everybody's face and destroy the federal budget in 2025. 30 years.
Well, it would.
It's 2025.
Or the weird part is there were people. There's all kinds of weird parts. There were people back in the day who really felt that if we spent a lot of money on prevention and, you know, early care,
and none of it works.
I think that we've blown that up. I don't think anybody in the certainly in a lot of communities are getting mammograms every year or 2 years.
No. The problem, Chief, is that there's only one way to judge the efficacy of such a thing, and that is the number of people dying of the condition you are doing all of this wonderful screening and preventing.
Right, I'm saying I think the screening has gone the way of the dodo bird in the last 10 years.
Well, COVID has it gone up? COVID well, I don't know. Yeah. Well, no. Obamacare actually mandated it be covered at no cost out of pocket. Okay. So that's the one thing that did happen with Obamacare. So for the last 10 years, that has been the case. Okay, so if you want to have a mammogram, you don't have to pay out of your pocket for it because the federal government said that your so-called insurance has to cover it as a zero deductible.
Try and get into a place and get one.
I'm just saying what the law said. Okay, now the fact, however, is that you can go online and you can look at the American Cancer Society or the CDC's numbers are always a little bit suspect because CDC wonder, even though you'd think that is the canonical source because it's supposedly on from what comes off the death certificates, okay? The fact of the matter is that I know factually that some of those are BS because I've got a stack of them for my family. Okay. On the other hand, the American Cancer Society has every reason to, you know, to report whatever they can manage to find. Anyway, if you look at all of these different, there's, you know, kind of those two sources that are thought to be accurate. The number of people dying, not age-adjusted mortality, not statistical games, just the number, you know, dead bodies are kind of easy to count. The number of people dying of all of these cancers has not gone down in the last 15 years.
No.
And by the way, it's not just because of lack of screening and COVID, because if you look at 2020, which was before all of that could have happened, the same thing was true.
Yeah, I think there's people falling out. The prices are getting... You were the one... Kevin, you and I talked about this last week. It was one of our listeners, lady, she's... Long story, but she's taking care of essentially her... he has a daughter-in-law, grandson's baby mother. Let's put it that way. lady has no insurance, no nothing. So she's taking care of her for cancer. And I said something about, well, gee, you know, this, you know, we're talking about one email. And I said, well, if you're going to do chemo, why don't you look outside the country? I don't know where. I don't know anything about it. I've just heard that. Okay. Heard that actually from you guys. And I heard that the lady's too far gone. They're not going to go. They were going to go to India. So, of course, I Google up chemo treatments in India versus the U.S. I thought it would be a problem. Guys, they talked about some chemo here is 15 to 45 grand. The same stuff in India. Now, of course, you're going to get somebody saying, it's like 500 to 2,000.
Yeah.
We're not even close.
Chief, when my sister was still alive, okay, now she decided that drinking very large quantities of alcohol was a really good idea. But when she was still alive, she also, by the way, all the way back to being a teenager, liked to use pretty much anything to get high, and one of the things that she managed to give herself doing that was hepatitis C.
That's not a good one.
Well, now, she didn't have any money, and usually follows from getting stoned all the time and not really being able to go to work, right? So anyway, Medicaid would not cover Sovaldi because it was expensive as hell, and it is one of the few drugs that have been discovered since the advent of antibiotics that actually does work and actually does.
Is that the one you got to take it 40 weeks, $1,000 a week or something?
It's a 3-month course of treatment.
Yeah, I thought it was a wild treatment. Yeah.
No, it's a 3-month course of treatment. It's a daily pill. It's a 3-month course of treatment. It actually cures hepatitis C.
Yes.
Okay. And it's also $90,000.
Right.
Now, it may not be anymore because the patent may be gone now, but at the time it was $90,000. Anyway, $90,000. Okay. Now, here's the thing. I told her, I said, look, I know you don't have a lot of money, but you can go get your butt, go down to the passport office, get your passport. She didn't have one. Go to India. Get on a plane, okay?
You stay there for 3 months.
Well, okay. Yeah. So find a roach motel that you can stay in.
Which might actually be a roach motel in India.
Well, which very well could be a roach motel. Yeah. However, the reality of it is that the drug is $1,000 for the whole 90-day course of treatment. That's a cash price. Walk in, pay, and by the way, they are perfectly fine with you doing this. So sit there and, you know, sit with your finger in your butt. You might spend $5 doing this if you are being ridiculously frugal and don't care about the roaches. Okay?
Well, if you put a quarter in the vibrating machine for the bed, do the roaches hop off?
Well, I don't know. Now, you know, you might have to worry about the dead hooker underneath. That could be a problem. But, there are challenges that come with
that's
this sort
if you're the one that killed her.
Well, there are issues with this course of action when you go into a third world country, right? However, the reality of the situation is that there's absolutely no reason other than the fact that we play this game in the United States that this was not. Now, as it was, I don't think it would have changed the final outcome at all, okay? However, it was absolutely something that she could address, even on the relatively meager amount of money that she had.
You know, Kevin, I think years ago, I won't mention his name, friend and client, who was I think he was the youngest guy ever on the ASCO board, right? Knows all about the pharmaceutical drug thing, and he was on one day. God, it had to be 10 years ago. I haven't seen him in a while. Unfortunately, his wife died. I don't know if he was still in Chicago, but terrific guy. He came on the show, and he was talking about how the pharmacy benefit managers get in the middle of this stuff somehow. I don't know if they do for chemo treatments, but...
We dealt with this.
And we talked about it. And Kevin, something about it. Like, if the three of us foolishly wanted to open up a pharmacy, that we don't really get any discount from, no matter how big we are, we don't get much of a discount from, you know, Lily and these people. Yet the pharmacy benefit manager somehow gets in the middle between the pharmacy and the drug company and they get kickbacks somehow. That's
well,
why
Chief, this is what happens when you allow an insurance company to be the negotiator.
But are they
price.
Are they really an insurance company, a pharmacy benefit
well,
manager? What are they?
Not really, but they are, okay, in that they're part of the PBMs are largely owned by the insurance and the drug and the pharmacy firms.
Well, he gave me some long story one night over a couple of beers that whatever group I don't think he was involved with, but he knew of, they were a pharmacy benefit manager over a state prison system somewhere.
Yeah,
and the amount of people in the prison that had this hepatitis C is, I'll say, higher than the general population.
No, really?
Well, when I hear stuff like that, I believe it because these people know. I believe it when you say something or Kevin says something. But I mean, I have no idea. I guess unfortunately for research, I've never been in jail. Fortunately, I've never been in jail.
hepatitis C is a blood-borne disease, so it's transmitted either through IV drugs or sex.
Okay, so the people wanted these guys to cover because they were the insurance company for the prisons.
Right.
They wanted these guys to cover essentially all these guys in prison, and they're going, you're not paying that much. So somehow or another, they ended up going to the drug company and getting some sort of a discount, some huge discount. Same time, they got the people who wanted them to do it, the state, to pony up. So they ended up in a, like, say, the $1,000 a week, they ended up getting another $500 or something from the state.
And they pocketed it.
Well, no, then they managed to get the drug company down to, like, $350.
Wow.
So actually, they made money out of the deal, and I'm thinking,
well, yeah,
only in America.
Chief, this is the thing. It's like, you know, if you think about this, okay, if I am a insurance firm, whether directly or indirectly, okay, and I'm quote unquote negotiating price, and I live in a world like all insurance firms do that I can only make a 10% operating margin, okay, because that's the law.
Well. Okay. I'm going to screw Kevin up totally when he gives his classes, and Russell too, and Larissa. I'm going to walk in and say define profit. They'll still be arguing about that for 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I know, and you know what? He'll go crazy, and you'll make him drink.
Kevin, okay. he already likes to drink.
Well, I drink more. Okay, but
no, we drink in the morning.
That's right. You know, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, right? But the problem here, Chief, is that the solution to this problem is very simple. This is a criminal act. It's a felony.
Don't tell those people that. They don't think it is.
Well, you and I, the person who is buying the product has to be the one that has that shops, okay, that does the negotiating on price. Now, the negotiation in many cases is the price is posted on the shelf, buy it or walk out, go somewhere else, right? That's fine. There's no problem with that. All right, but that is how health insurance worked when it was insurance. You got the bill from the doctor.
Oh, I get it. I remember those days.
Yeah, well, I remember it too. I remember it all the way back to when I was a kid, and my mom, you know, wrote the check to at the checkout counter. You know, there was a girl behind there at the end of the time that we were in the doctor's office.
Well, I want to ask Kevin a question. I'm going to fire up with Russell and Larissa the same thing. Hal, I don't know. Hal will go into some Austrian kind of thing on me, but Kevin, if you're an insurance company exec, and all of a sudden you're limited to 10% by statute. All of a sudden, things are doing pretty good, and you say to yourself, you know, that Learjet, the can's like right next to the pilot. The ladies in the company really don't like using that when they have to go to the bathroom because there is really no bathroom. We really need a Gulfstream, and you buy a Gulfstream. I'd go out on a limb and say, to me, that's profit. What does academia think? What do they think about all this? The topic in general, is it anybody even addressed it?
Well, let me put it this way: you're probably in a way, I never teach it. It's not widely used. I think everybody knows about it. It may be that your best way to measure profit is EBITDA, because that's just telling you what you churn through the business on a day in, day out basis. It ignores depreciation expense, and it ignores capital expenditures. So cash flow account for the capital expenditure. So now you get your Gulfstream, and it would not increase or decrease profit one way or the other.
What if you rent it $10,000 a month, $100,000 a month?
Well, then it's an operating expense. Then you got a different measure.
See, I'm a little clever. I've moved this stuff around. One of the things that's happening in Chicago is they've sent the tax bills out, and let's just say there's unhappiness across the city, especially on the north side.
I've heard that there's some rather large numbers in those
impacts. Our guest from last Monday's show has a house in Edgebrook, 16G to 25G.
Oh, okay, that's a number.
The guy here in the building who has the... How do we go from bungalows to raised ranches? We don't call them bungalows anymore. They're a raised ranch. Looks to me like a bungalow, but it's not anymore, right? Like, it's not offside, it's encroachment, you know. We move from things to things here. Salvador, I don't know what his were. I'm going to say three. Now they're 4,500. 1,500 bumping him for a bungalow on the south side. That's a number. What I'm saying, and yet you have Northwestern, which has, for God's sake, 6, 7, 10 square blocks right in the best part of the city.
And of course, they're exempt.
Not non-profit. Well, what do you mean by non-profit? Everybody's making a fortune there in administration. I don't know about the doctors. I mean, if the guy, whoever is running, somebody...
We've got to be careful with the words here. It's not a non-profit. It's a not-for-profit.
Yeah, okay.
Well, actually, but there's two different kinds there.
It's good double talk. It's actually quality double talk.
Well, when you mention that,
let's go with double speak. We might as well go all in Orwellian.
But the CBOE was not for profit, yet they paid taxes. They were designed as a, well, they used the same thing as a country club, where the members were the owners, and if you actually had a surplus, you paid taxes on it. So you had to pick your number. You know, what did you want your working, not your working capital, but your stash for a rainy day to be? And they always shot for, this is when I was on the board, they shot for $100 million. So they would say they'd want to make like $5 million a year to get there. If they were on a progression of over five, they just wouldn't charge the members any fees for 2 months and drop it back down. But so there's not-for-profit that pays taxes, there's not-for-profit that doesn't pay taxes, then there's non-profit. I don't know... Could you do the definition of all those, Kevin? I can't, but somewhere along the line, somebody, I don't even think Northwestern pays a water bill, but I mean, so what if the guy who runs the place, Kevin, who was the one who told us what they thought the actual cash flow there was? It was some incredible amount of money. Say the guy who runs the joint makes $40 million. I don't think he does. Well, what is that? To me, it's profit, right? It's $30 million more than the next CEO. What do you want to call it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that for in that whole not-for-profit world is one of the big scams, is that it used to be that you didn't make as much money if you wanted to work in that world, but now, you know, that's long ago and far away. Now it's one way for a small group of people to make a really sweet profit, and that would be people. Speaking of sweet, with people who sit in the C-suites for these.
Well, if you're the schmuck in there, and this is all kind of the same subject with the insurance, and your bill for a week in Northwestern with some even small surgery is $100,000. For God's sake, pay your property taxes. That's just me, but pay your water.
Oh no, that'd be $150,000.
Well, maybe, yeah, I guess.
I'm just saying that, you know, I don't know where people get the idea that somehow is going to, you know, you'd think, well, you know, since Chicago has announced that a universal basic income for those people who don't have any money, of course, no details on that, but that's all over the right-wing media anyway, and all over the, you know, X.
By the way, you know whose idea that was? It was from the right.
But you know, I mean, and I'm like, excuse me, where's some numbers? Where's, you know, the quals on this? I mean, all the, you know, all the, of course, that's nowhere in any of the news articles. I can't find it.
Well, if so you, I'm like, I know Kevin doesn't like it, but I would say the first place you want to look to see something that was actually very well thought out. I don't even to this day, I don't know my agreement or not agreement with it, was Tricky Dick's negative income tax proposal. I thought it made an amazing amount of sense.
Well, you know, there's also, but here's the thing. What the problem with it is that the data on the little pilot that they did during the COVID time is available. I have read it. And yes, it is true that from what I can determine anyway, assuming that the reporting is accurate and the, you know, data collection is accurate.
I never knew that they tried it.
Yeah, they did. In Chicago, in fact. And the it was during the crazy, though. So, I mean, you can say, well, you know, there was a distortion there. But that's actually not a bad time for it because people were forcibly laid off, right?
Yeah.
So the what they found is that most of the funds indeed got spent on things like rent, food, electricity. Okay, so you know, they didn't go to the closest weed store.
Well, we didn't have one back then, but...
Well, but, you know, okay, the closest booze store.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they had a weed store down in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, Kevin. There always was a weed store. It just wasn't legal. But, you know, it didn't end up in the local pusher's pocket, basically. Okay. That's the good side. The bad side is that it also showed a significant decrease of almost the amount of the subsidy in people's actual taxable income. So it was a substitution for the most part. Okay. Now, and this was under extremely adverse circumstances when people were forced out of their jobs.
Well, the beauty of it, in terms of theory anyway, just let me fill in a little bit. This was on the heels of Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty.
Yep, which didn't work.
Well, a few of the things did. You know, you guys probably know this. There's only one program from that still exists. Do you know what it is?
SNAP?
I think SNAP was before that. I'm going to say Head Start.
Well, Head Start was expanded great. It really was a
non-starter. It's not the exact thing, but it...
But no, I'm saying Bush was the one that really kind of cranked that up.
Right, but I think it was... I guess it's the only one left, I thought. But here... Just a little bit of the theory on this is Lyndon Johnson had his huge war on poverty, and I remember at the time, even though I was very young, I was school someplace, and some wag in class of one of the teachers said, well, you know, if you divided the amount of poor people into the amount of money and just sent them a check, you wouldn't have any poor people, which is a little bit, you know, out there in terms of humor, but in fact, it rings a bell. So, because so many people that are thumbing it, some in the pie on the way down, you're like, these big programs don't work. So then Tricky Dick comes up and says, well, you know what? We're going to have something. We're just going to send everybody a check. But the beauty of it was, Kevin, you probably remember this too. Say the check was $2,000. I didn't care what you did. They sent you a check for $2,000. But the minute you got a job and made $10, they only took like $5 off the check. So it was designed so that anything you did incrementally was beneficial to you, so it encouraged you to get off the sofa, even to go shovel snow for people. So
I mean, the idea behind it was that if you're taking a welfare check, and I don't know what the amount of that would be, that if you get a job, even if it's you know, making fries at McDonald's, if you get a job, you might make a little more. But when you start thinking about it in terms of whatever I make, if I make an extra $50 a week, I'm working 40 hours that week to make the extra $50 over the welfare check. So the theory behind it was that if they were to graduate it, so that you had incentive to work to actually improve your lot, that then, you know, that would be a productive thing. Carl, does that match up with what you were describing with Chicago?
Well, kind of, sort of, but not really. I mean, it's the there's a bunch of people on the left side of the political aisle who have argued that this data shows that the program actually works, and their argument is that works is defined as they didn't blow it on booze and drugs. Okay, and you know, we actually got spent on things that you use to live. Okay, and that's
well, in the bill itself, there was none of that stuff. It just, you give the guy a check if he wants to blow it on.
Right.
It was all
well, that's the thing, is that there was no, there was, you know, it was a completely open-ended, here's the money thing, right, with no, you know, with no requirement that you use it on any particular thing at all. And so, you know, that was one of the reasons that people have claimed that it was a great success, because you didn't have to target it. It wasn't like
how was
Snap.
It a success? They never did it.
Chief, it was a pilot program, and they did do it. That's what I'm saying, is they did do it. Okay, but that's the argument they're using to say that, you know, that this is why it was good, and therefore we're going to do it, you know, for real at scale. All right, now. Of course, the problem with there's two problems that come up with this. Number one is Chicago, like most other large cities, has this revenue problem right now, matching against expenditures. Okay, so now we're going to add another significant expenditure into the budget, and by the way, we don't have a surplus with which to pay for.
Well, so what they tried here was a state deal. I don't think the federal government ever issued a check.
No, the feds were not, and the feds aren't involved in this new one either. It's a state and local thing, but of course the problem is you're going to have to come up with the tax revenue to pay for it, okay, which, you know, currently doesn't exist. Now, you've already got people like Griffin who have said, up yours, and have left Chicago. Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, that guy made a lot of money, but I'm not anxious to make him my Solomon either.
Well, I'm not saying he's a Solomon, and in fact, I've got all kinds of problems with a lot of people like him. All right. However, the fact of the matter is that whether you like it or not, you can't force somebody to labor, and you can't force them to stay. And if you make the bargain unattractive from their point of view, it doesn't matter whether objectively you think it's right or wrong. They will leave.
Well, you actually can force people to stay.
Well, you can try.
They're pretty good at it.
Okay.
Force people to stay, Tom.
Well, when I say force people to stay, somebody like Griffin, and I don't know his whole business, but he used to have a big bunch of people here, and some of them moved to Miami. But he also has, I don't have much about his, I think he has a bunch of people still on all the trading floors. They're not going to let him say he made all that money in Florida. They're here.
Well, there's going to be some cash that, you know, that goes to the other. I mean, you know, that's going to be true. By the way, it'll be interesting. So I still track my old house in Chicago. Actually, not technically Chicago, but Cook County, as far as property taxes and such. And the 2024 numbers are not up yet, so I'm looking at it right now as we're talking, because you're talking about people getting these huge bills, and so that'll be interesting to see, you know, what ends up happening there.
Well, I don't see how anybody. I mean, there was a, I don't know. You hear this on the radio, so when they say a study, you don't know who the hell did it, but they were talking about somebody took a look at people that make $100,000 a year and how strapped they are. If they have any kind of a house and a car and everything, insurance.
Well, there was that article that just came out recently. It says the real poverty rate is at 140 for a family of four.
Yeah.
And I wrote an article on that, and I said, I don't know if that's, you know, really where the floor is. However, the point that, you know, that I've made repeatedly is that the way that we dealt with the inflationary impulse of the 1970s was to force women out of the house, okay? And it basically, here, have a second income, right? now you can pay for it. Okay, that's nice, except the way this began was, okay, you can pay for it, however, we'll force you out of the house when the kids are like eight, all right? And therefore, we had an entire generation that came home from school, and they you know, we called that latchkey, right? Remember that, Chief?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, guess what? That ratchet job is now down to the point that we try to force women out of the house when the baby is like 6 weeks old.
Well, there was talk about studies.
And the problem with that is that child care is not cheap. All right. And when you take that plus the loss of subsidies across the board, whether it be on child care, whether it be on so-called early education, whether it be on, you know, on health care or whatever have you, with Obamacare, you make too much money. When you take all of that and you ratchet that back out, you've got the same problem that I've pointed out several times, which is that I will not, despite having two products in the can, I could go up, set up and stand up a company to market and sell right now. I will not do it. And the reason is that the third $20,000 that I make, I get to keep zero of it.
Well, if you go from 40 to 50, and all of a sudden have to pay your own insurance and stuff, you're down money.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Kevin, was it Flanagan?
Once you cross that threshold. Now, here's the thing. That's the threshold for me as a single individual, yeah, right? It's worse if I'm a young couple and I have a kid, and now I've got to pay for childcare on top of it.
Wasn't you, Kevin? I think I might have talked about it with Flanny, News Radio 78, and they come up with some pretty good stuff, so I always try to give them a... They were talking about how the median income now... Was it median or... I don't know. Anyway, it was pretty close to the second person that goes to work now, usually the lady, but maybe the guy. You don't never know these days. In like 50 or 60% of the cases... They didn't make as much money as it costs for childcare.
Yeah, they lose money.
They lose money on the deal, yeah.
Right. You lose money going to work. So here's the thing, though. You take a look at somebody like my daughter's age, okay, who is, you know, she's in the bracket where her and her boyfriend could decide to crank out a couple of kids. All right, now she is halfway through.
Let me run that. Kevin, we got to think about that for a second. Carl, a grandfather. Can you imagine?
Well, that could be scary, yes. I'll agree with that.
You see him sitting there coloring with the little girls and everything?
Father in the race.
Is what it is, right? But the thing is this, is that neither of them has any interest in doing it, and economics is a huge part of that decision.
I'm still working my way through. You, instead of reading, like, Black Beauty the Kid, be reading, like, your latest economic treatise.
Oh, absolutely, you know.
I kids mean, like four are looking at you like, what in the hell is he talking about?
What is this garbage? Yeah, exactly. But the thing is that, you know, Chief, if you look at the population pyramid for the United States, you look at the graph, okay, this squeeze is now going on the second 10-year cohort old.
Yeah.
Right? And it's very evident in that graph. Now, the reality of it is, if you fix this tomorrow, if we were to take a chainsaw to the medical system, and for every hospital, you blow up the billing building next door, okay? You literally raise it and fire everybody in there, and now you got two ladies or two dudes or a dude and a lady behind the front counter that take a check. Everybody pays the same price. We have one number for every single thing that the hospital does. Doesn't matter how you pay for it. All right, so you get rid of all of that overhead, and you force all of that into the market, and now you've got a roughly 15% decrease in the cost of operation for every business in the town, all right, because all of that comes back out.
Oh, yeah.
And you do all of
that.
Well,
you're talking a $1,000 a month raise for, like, every employee, for God's sake.
You're talking You're talking about a huge... Now, the 20% of the people you just laid off are going to want to lynch you. Okay, but everybody else is going to find you a hero instantly.
I don't think you're going to lay that many people off.
Well, you're going to lay a bunch of people off, but they,
depends.
Chief,
it depends on how it happens, eh?
Chief, they won't stay laid off. Okay,
okay, but, I mean, I have a different. We
here is the point.
You're going to displace people, however you want to call it.
Yeah, and then it'll get absorbed into other areas. Okay, but there will be a dislocation. That would happen immediately, and it would be severe and it would be deep. Now here's the thing though about doing it. Let's say that you know Trump gets out of bed this morning, and tells Pam Blondie to go, you know, cuff and stuff five insurance company, five hospital executives. All right, you're going to jail. You're doing 10 years. We're confiscating all your stuff. Have a nice day. It's $1 million fine per person that you screwed. You're going to literally have your underwear left when we get done with you, and you're going to do the 10 years. Okay, and you did that. And then they turn around and they say, oh God, he means it. Because the first guy's a Democrat, obviously. But then eventually you'll get some of the Republicans and they'll be like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't a joke. All right, so that happens. And then couples like my daughter and
her
boyfriend.
How many Democratic CEOs do we have?
I don't know, but hey, you know what? Does it matter?
Well, the high end of the richest people now have trended Democrat for a long time, Tom.
I think there's a difference
between richest people and CEOs, but that's just...
Among CEOs, I think it's, you know... All right, so it doesn't matter. Point being, you drive it into people's heads that this is for real. It's not a joke. It's not an election year game. You do this, you're going to go to prison. That's it. And we mean it. And the edifice collapses. The cost of healthcare comes down by 80% in an afternoon, and it stays there. And then... people like my daughter and her boyfriend see this change. He works, she works, both of them have an extra grand a month. Okay, now that's not small ball money, right?
No.
So all of a sudden, between the two of them, they got an extra $20,000 a year, all right? And now, hey, wait a minute, the economics on this don't look so bad. Maybe let's have a couple kids.
The only issue I have with what you're saying is that I think you're talking about a C paper here, Carol, because Kevin, you be the judge here. You're the professor. I think you might see stuff totally different than what you're talking about. I don't think that the nurses and the doctors, I think they've been restricted on their pay increases over the last several years.
Of course.
I think you're going to find some stuff happening here that is way different than it seems obvious, like what you're saying.
Well, no, there would be many things that would, but...
I'll lob this one out there. I think one of the biggest people that are going to take a pay cut if that happened is Jeff Burrow and the NFL. Because if all of a sudden these drug prices came down, strip away Notre Dame, NIL, strip away the Bears, the Cincinnati Bengals... take those drug commercials off those TV shows, what do they got left? I'm going to say every single person on Notre Dame's team, every single person in the NFL has a huge pay cut if all of a sudden they don't have any drug commercials.
I agree with you. I
think they'll take a bigger hit than the nurse.
I don't think the nurse would take a hit at all.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I could say yes to that, but the number of generic Viagra commercials that you watch during a football game are really high. So I think, you know, the low-priced drugs would definitely take over. Whether they pay as much as Pfizer does, I don't know. But damn, you can't watch TV for a half an hour without being shown how you can get $0.50 a pill or something for Viagra.
I think those things, again, not to get into the details of it, but I think those commercials are for the organizations that prescribe that stuff for you. Places like Hims and stuff, who's actually on the New York Stock Exchange. They're not talking about the specific drug. They're saying that they'll get you what you need. You got to pay them.
Yeah, I'm sure some... look, there would be wide-ranging effects.
Yeah, you never know. That's why it's hard to...
Right. But the reality of it is this. Let me get the last sentence out. So you did this. People like my daughter and her boyfriend decide, hey, wait a minute, now the economics makes sense to have children. Okay? I mean, let's face it. The reality is that men and women look at each other with a gleam in their eye, and this is a very good thing, or there wouldn't be any humans.
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's the way it is, right?
If it weren't for hormones, we'd never do anything that stupid.
Well, you know, there you go, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that gleam is still going to be there in the eye, and now all of a sudden the economics align with that desire. Okay, fine. This is great. Except it takes 20 years. for those children to show up in the workforce and actually have meaning.
And if you're a mom, you never stop being a mom, even if they're 50.
Well, but the thing is this: if you reverse it today, Chief, it takes 20 years before the demographic shift takes hold. And if we don't, if we do not fix this with the vertical move that you have in the CMS spending right now, and if we don't solve this, and this is why I've been beating this drum. Every exponential curve does this. It always goes vertical. And we are now there. It is now happening.
I think we are too.
Right now. And if we don't solve it, this is going to blow up in everybody's face, and it's going to happen this year.
I wonder, Kevin, you do a lot of work with the smaller businesses that, when you say do a lot of work, a lot of those people are in your classes, and you're pretty in touch with the whole stuff in the neighborhood. I wonder if the solution... And the reason why I say this is, you know, we were alive. We weren't alive when they broke up Big Oil. We were nowhere near alive. But I remember when they broke up AT&T. Wasn't that at least a 10-year joust through the courts that cost $1 zillion? And at the end of the day, they broke everybody up and people sort of got back together. And the competition came from other places sort of anywhere, to the point where you wonder if you even really needed to go through that mess.
Well, yeah, it took forever. So MCI was long gone when, you know, it was their lawsuit, their antitrust case, and so MCI was dead by the time it got settled, or all but dead by the time it got settled. And
I think they might have still sold for 20 cents a share.
Frankly, you know, and that was the big thing, is technology change. So they broke it up just as we were starting down the road towards not needing landlines anyway, which had to do everything to do with, you know, the whole breakup in the first place.
Well, I mean, I guess in the Carl obviously is coming from the direction that you take people and you put them in jail. I almost wonder if that wouldn't be a long process that gets you nowhere.
Well, maybe it is and maybe it's not, but here's the thing. The richer you are, the worse jail sucks.
Well, I get that part, but what I'm saying is I wonder if somehow or another, and this all kind of ties together, the last few shows, basically because of Hal, we'll blame him, has to do with the banking regulations over the last 20 years and how they absolutely favor only giving loans to rich people and big companies. With the capital stuff instead of the reserve requirement, which I don't get at all, but they didn't ask me.
Well, that's a very serious problem.
Yeah.
And the changes that were made when we, and I don't, you know, I wasn't on your show at the time, Chief, but when Bernanke got that nice little one sentence added into the what finally passed, you know, the original TARP bill was basically one piece of paper, $700 billion blank check to Paulson, right?
Yeah.
And that went down, and then that day the market crashed, and they threatened tanks in the streets, and we're going to have a revolution right now if you don't give us the money, because every bank in the country is going to fail, and okay, and they did all of those things, and then the second version of it that went through passed. Well, I caught this as it was on the floor before it was voted on. And the key item in there was the authority for the Federal Reserve to set the reserve rate to zero.
But they ended up changing capital rules too with these.
Well, I understand that, but
with these stupid, what do they call them, the tests, the something tests, or whatever. Like.
Yeah, yes, but the thing is that what they did was they set the reserve rate to zero.
Right.
Okay. Now.
Well,
that.
Yes, but then they pile in with these crazy capital requirements, which
I get that. Yeah. But Chief, what you ended up with is interest on reserves and the haircuts being the replacement for what was formerly a loan size quality size neutral reserve ratio that had to be put on all your
loans.
Which
made more sense to me.
Well, which didn't screw the little guy who doesn't have a AAA credit rating.
Right. Well, let me get back to my original question to Kevin. I'm trying to find, let's put it this way. We listen to Carl. What he's espousing, sorry, Carl, is never going to happen. It's certainly not going to happen with this guy in charge, and by the way, whoever the next guy is not going to run on that campaign because he's not going to get anywhere. So my question to Kevin is on the low end. That's not the right term. Would it be better if somebody were to help finance, say, these emergency care centers where people could actually do half of their insurance at those places, and maybe have a bigger policy if somebody gets cancer, or something like if PTI had 300 employees, you'd have to do one thing that Carl wants to do. You'd have to equalize the prices everybody pays, which is a problem. But I wonder if you couldn't almost self-insure or use these places as a way to compete. I don't think you're not going to take Northwestern down by fiat. You might take them down if everybody else is just playing cheaper. If there were 15 or 20 Oklahoma surgical centers instead of one or something. I'm just asking a question. Maybe the way to go attack it would be to use a competitive way and not the atomic bomb way. Because I don't think you can do
it. Well, the competitive way only works if you stop the collusion. That's why you have to throw people in jail.
I'm just saying ignore them.
But you can't ignore them.
Well, sure you can. Because I had an MRI a year ago. I had a back issue. Well, I don't know if I probably still do, but it was like $6,000 at Northwestern. There's people that would do it for $250 and read it for you.
Absolutely.
So the question is, I'm trying to ask, is there a way to stop Northwestern from charging $6,000 because everybody's going to the guy who's charging $250? That makes, to me, economically more sense than trying to throw some guy in jail in Northwestern, or if you did it, it's going to take you 5 years to do it.
What you're saying is less insurance is part of the equation here, I believe.
Well, you might even be willing to spot somebody that. It wouldn't be the same number.
Well, here's the thing is they do have these plans that are just catastrophic insurance plans. So they're way cheaper. Cheaper by multiple hundreds of a percent. And they actually were not, they were only allowed under Obamacare as, and I'm going from memory here, but they were only allowed for people in a transition period, like, transition between jobs and things like that. But otherwise, they were not legal and they had a limited time, shelf life for the under Obamacare. Now, I believe those got repealed, and you can now get those if you choose.
Not really. No.
I thought that was part of the tax plan in Trump's first term.
No, it was the problem is that there is a age barrier on them that remains.
Really?
Yeah. So the original idea behind this is that this is fine if you're like 25. If you're me, and you're like 60, it's not.
Okay.
Well, you still have the issue. You still sort of have the issue, Kevin. And if
the reason I bring it up, Tom, is because then you can have your coverage for you have cancer, you have a very serious heart attack, and you're in you're in the recovery room for 2 weeks. So all those things that run up big price tags, you'll actually insure for those. And then if you wanted to go find a direct primary care physician where you did a subscription. For services, a monthly price for your physician, you could do that, or you could just pay out of pocket as you see fit.
Well, right. That used to be before
that, to
Obama.
Me, it's a much better model. It's a much more if you want to get the cost to the average schmuck down, that should do it.
Well, you still don't solve the problem of if you have your emergency care center, you're doing something. I'm just kind of thinking out of the box and. You and I mess up a finger in softball and go to that emergency room and we get the emergency care and they put a splint on it and it's not very much money. If all of a sudden you and I, because we're big swinging knuckleheads, are playing out in Las Vegas and go to that emergency room and the tab is $30,000, it doesn't help us, especially if our deductible's 10.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, but this was one of the things that, when I sold my company and then, everybody's like, oh, well, you could just take COBRA. Well, yeah, you can for a short period of time, okay? However, then I had several years where I bought what amounted to a cat plan for myself and my daughter. Okay, and it was cheap. Now, that exactly the model that, you know, that Kevin's talking about is what it was. Was that if I needed to go see the doctor, or she needed to go, you know, get the sports physical to be able to play sports at, in the school, whatever, the soccer team, I just paid for it. All right, she needs the, shots for whatever. Well, you just pay for it.
Well, that's the beauty of it, because then there's no middleman. Well, how do you name a doctor and take a check now?
Well, here's the thing, though, Chief. All right, so the thing that was astounding to me, all right, this is a direct experience here speaking, all right, you know, she needed to go to the doctor at one point. You know, had something that ended up being a fairly serious respiratory infection, but, could have turned into something serious, right? So, all right, we're going to go to the doctor, all right? We go to the doctor. And I called them and I said, look, we do not have official insurance. We have it for catastrophes, but not for anything else. I said, I want a price, and it was half what they were going to bill the insurance company.
Yeah, well,
half. And so I just wrote a check.
I challenge you to get any one of these people that are now in all these groups. There's hardly anybody independent. If you charge you. I challenge you to be able to give a check to one of those guys or ladies.
Well, yeah. See, that's the problem. Yeah. Is that you? This is why I say, as soon as it's like I've used this, analogy of a gas station has no price on the pump, right? You pump the gas, and then you have to scan your car insurance card, because your car insurer has negotiated with the gas station, and. You find out what the price is after the gas is in the tank, and you can't say no, right? All right, and some people pay more, some people pay less. And the thing is, the obvious thing is, the reason this has not happened is because a guy across the street would put a price on the board,
yeah.
And the dude doing that be out of business in an afternoon. All right, the reason it doesn't work in the health system is they all collude. That's illegal.
They collude in more ways than.
Absolutely.
I told you guys my health insurance or my health savings account story, didn't I?
Yeah. They did it to screw you.
Well, for those that didn't, they used to have this thing, well, there's two kinds of the health savings account. One is you deduct a whole bunch of dough, you don't have to pay, and it goes into this health savings account, and it works like an IRA. I think at the time, we could take $5,000 a year. My brother got this great policy, and Dan does everything well. Including cooking a great turkey yesterday. So it was $5,000. You pulled out of your account, your check, and you put it in this. And there was only like one bank that did it. The only thing you could do is there's no place to really invest it. We're going back 15 years, and there was one that you had to use up the end of the year. But the other one acted just like an IRA, where you could keep.
So flex spending, you would save it and you had to use it or lose it.
Yeah, but this was not. Yeah. This one you could actually keep.
SAs, you have, there's a certain qualification for it. You have to be in a high deductible plan. You got, there's a whole bunch of things involved there. But yes, you can fund your HSA and you don't lose it. And so the balance in it will grow over time if you keep funding it, such that you can keep going higher and higher on your deductible, because you can cover deductibles out of your.
Yeah, except for one thing.
People collude, and they all know this, and then they find out. Then they know what it is, and they screw you out of your entire account.
They're so far ahead of you. I'm sitting there going, after a few years, I got $15,000 on this thing. Well, fast forward this one 20 years. This will be as big as my IRA, for God's sake. You put more in there than you could in the IRA, and all of a sudden, there were 3 years in a row where I messed up something playing softball. Or anyway, 3 years in a row, I had. My doctor said, go to see the specialist, get an MRI. And fortunately for me, everything was fine all three times. You know what the bill was for the specialist and the MRI all three times?
The amount to complete your account.
It was like $4,850.
Yeah.
So the insurance company never paid a dime. And I'm sitting there, hey, my $15,000's gone. What happened to my 15 Jesus? Finally, I sit there and go, these guys are ahead of me on this deal.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty good at this.
Well, that's because they have more information than you do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think to sort of solve this, one thing is you have to solve it is going to take a will. And I know, we can debate which side of the aisles. To me, the Democrats want to keep funding it without any money. and Republicans don't want to fund it, but they don't have any other solution, so just let everybody die. Well, neither, somewhere in the middle, the three of us, I think, can come up with a better solution. Although, I will say this, though, I think the solution is a multi-year one. I don't know.
By the way, Tom, you keep saying they don't have any other solution, but they actually did in 2008 have H.R. 6110, which was proposed. It just wouldn't make it out of committee because it was a Democratic-controlled committee. Now, I don't think it's a plan I like, but it was a plan. So don't say they didn't have a plan.
They didn't have an effective plan.
They had a very fleshed-out plan.
Well, who's the they? Which side was that?
Up in a bill.
Who was it? Which side was that?
That was Paul Ryan was the driver of it.
Okay. Well, I mean, Hillary might have a plan. I'm saying that, but those plans, they're just like the three of us talking. They don't go anywhere. I'm talking about a plan that actually worked.
Yeah, we couldn't make it out of committee to go to the House for a vote.
Right.
Because guess who controlled the committee?
What was the fix?
It was built more around tax credits for insurance. But it was to, you know, I mean, that was the big part of it.
But it still doesn't, neither side appears to me to be willing to take on the prescription and hospital costs. And until you do that,
to go after costs. Yeah, this cannot be done through any other way.
And it's almost like, you know, it's like...
Yeah, but what it did was it was intended to enable people to shop.
Well, I understand that, but you,
which would apply some market force to cost, but it was definitely not addressing costs. As I said, I don't think it was the solution. All I'm saying is don't keep saying that the Republicans never had a solution. That's not true.
Okay, that solution absolutely blows in Chicago when you're going to have four hospitals left. Now what?
Do we have four hospitals left because we didn't do something in 2008?
I'm not going to give the Republicans credit for something that didn't go anywhere. It might have been a good idea, but so we've had good ideas too. Where do they go?
I'm not asking you to give them credit for anything. I'm just asking you to stop saying something that's not true.
Okay, but right now, neither side has a solution.
Well, right now, neither side has any interest in anything that is going to put us a meat axe to the idea that we could put 40,000 billing clerks into the medical system a month and call that employment growth.
Once you get your first check from one of these prescription companies or drug companies, I think you're part of the gangsters.
Well, yeah, hello. Well, as I said, but that is why expecting Congress to do this we will go straight off the cliff and 5,000 feet straight down onto the rocks. The only way this gets stopped is within the power of the executive, because it is one person and cannot be prevented. Congress can't block it. And that's the reason that it has to be jail. It has to be prosecutions. It has nothing to do with whether or not I'd like to have some logic come in from the congressional side of the aisle. You know, I would. You know, it will never happen.
You know that I don't disagree with you at all in the substance of this, but if somebody walked up tomorrow and got on the podium in the White House and started talking about the Sherman and Clayton Act, they'd say, who is this Neanderthal? People have no idea what this stuff is, Carl.
Well, you can go ahead and Neanderthal it all you want. Handcuffs are handcuffs.
By the way, what I'm saying to do that right now is like grabbing somebody in Chicago because they got blacked out windows. The whole world,
Okay, you know what? Here's the thing.
You're very hard to agree with. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying the change would be, nobody even know what you're talking about.
Chief, they've had these street takeovers in New York City. You know, I guess there was one in Queens recently where, you know, all these youths showed up with their ricers and, you know, they're doing donuts in the middle of the intersection, this and that and the other thing, right? The reason they're doing this is because no one goes to jail. If the next time one starts, 50 cops show up and every single car that's involved in it gets impounded and auctioned, and every one of those people faces a felony charge, the next guy who thinks about doing it is going to think twice.
I'm not disagreeing what I'm saying.
I'm just saying
you've been away from these cities too long.
Some people off to, you know why all this stuff goes on? Because nobody goes to jail. Why do you think Charlotte has the problems they have on the transit? Why do you guys have the problems you have on your mass transit? Because that guy who burned the lady had been arrested 70 times and wasn't in jail.
Kevin, how do I not just be the referee here? What I'm saying is the gap between the world you're talking about and the world now is increasing by the day. I don't like it any more than you do.
Okay,
but fine. I'm saying for that to happen,
peel it back and show and the first one that you do, everyone's going to say, "Oh, that was a political hit." Don't we do a lot of that these days too, right?
If it was me, and again, Kevin, be the referee. I would say if I was mayor tomorrow, God, I wouldn't want that job. I would have to say, okay, guys, we're going to button this up a little bit. You got 30 days or 60 or 90 days, however long it is, I'll have somebody to whoever you went to make your car loud and obnoxious, bring it back to them and tell them you want it the way it was supposed to be. And oh, by the way, find the guy who put the dark tinted windows in there. You got 90 days to get him the hell out of there, because it will be a way, it will be something that we're going to be able to pull you over for that offense. And oh, by the way, if we do, we're not going to come up to the window because we can't see you. You're going to be out of the car. You're going to have your hands on the trunk. And by the way, we're going to search it. You can't.
It's a felony stop. Yeah.
I think that this has been so insidious for so long to all of a sudden pull some dude over tomorrow and haul his ass out of there. I don't know how you do it. It's you know.
Well, I know how you do it. You turn the lights.
If they want to do that with the drug companies and the medical providers and say you have 6 months to get your new pricing schemes unveiled and the collaborations that you have, the collusions that you have, and so on. If they want to give them 6 months' notice and start hauling them off to jail, well, I'm okay with that.
I'd rather they just fix it. I don't really want more people in jail.
No,
fix
Chief,
it.
Here's the thing: if you warn people, they'll sue. They'll get injunctions and everything. No, arrest them, throw them in jail, and oh, by the way, now, guess what? You're on the advantage side. Why? What is it with this threat thing that always goes on? Trump always chickens out, right? I'm going to threaten to do this. I'm going to threaten to do that. No, because now you've just tipped your hand. If I've really got a hand, if I'm sitting at a poker table and I got four aces, the price of seeing those aces is going to be every chip you have in front of you.
it is so insidious all over the place. It's in the amount of combinations. What do you think all these defense stocks? I mean, these things. When Lou sent around the thing, how many combinations there been in there? Everywhere you look, it's everywhere.
Chief, it's crazy. But here's the thing.
But even the guy that gave me the tour of his restaurant last week said the two companies that used to send me fresh turkeys, they're both out of business.
Yeah,
there's like three companies left that do turkeys, for God's sake. I mean, it's everywhere.
I understand that, and the way that you break it is you start locking people up.
And you know what? We are sitting in an interesting situation right now, because we do have a lame duck president who probably has more power to do things than any lame duck, or in many ways more inclination to do things using executive power than any lame duck that I can remember.
Oh yeah.
So if he really wanted to do it, he could probably, you know, what's he going to do? What are you going to do? What are they going to do? Impeach him? Done that a couple times. What else are they going to?
Yeah, but Kevin, he's
if he were inclined, he could do it.
Right. He also the only guy. Boy, I'm not a big huge fan. The only guy I actually thought might do something like that, because the dude had absolutely zero morals about going to get contributions from people and then just walking away from what they asked. Bill Clinton was the guy who could go to you and get a big bunch of dough for environmental issues and walk away and never even touch the environment when he talked to you about. I mean, Trump has got all kinds of money from these guys.
He didn't have a belief system. I don't know that Trump is necessarily afraid of upsetting things.
But I think he's got a lot of people. These pharmaceutical companies That's why, you know, when we had, I don't want to get into this, but we've talked on and off, Kevin, about term limits. And I was reading some article about, it almost came to the point where somebody was thinking about it. And they were talking about how now the drug companies were paying people, and so many insurance companies were paying people that looked like they had talent that were going for state legislature. They were just dropping it way down. So by the time your first year got there, they already had you.
Oh, yeah. Well, Chief, article that I put up this morning, okay? So you probably had heard a couple of years ago that Pfizer has been working on and testing a mRNA-based flu shot. Now, the reason they want to do this is because...
Weren't they all based like that or no?
Well, no. The reason they were doing...
mRNA was the COVID.
Okay.
The mRNA was the COVID stuff. Now, the reason they wanted to do this is that the way you do the traditional flu shot is you grow it in chicken eggs. Okay? This is a relatively long process, which means you have to formulate it in, like, the spring. Okay? And you have to guess what strains are going to be coming around the next year, because that's just how long it takes.
You try and figure out what's going on in South America, right, or South
or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, you're going to be wrong to some extent most of the time. And some years you get a better match than others. But the other thing is, it's pretty effing expensive because you're using all these chicken eggs, right, in the processing and everything. So being able to do this entirely synthetically is something that once they manage to get this stuff in all these people's arms and get them to use it during COVID, they thought, let's use a platform for this. Okay. So in the New England Journal of Medicine, and by the way, a nice puff piece that circulated through all of the mainstream media, was that the study trial results are out. By the way, it showed non-inferiority. Okay, in other words, it's at least as good as the other one, right? And no serious indications of trouble. Okay, now, that on its surface doesn't sound terrible. There's two problems. Number one, Pfizer did all of the investigation, all of the data keeping, all of the analysis. By the way, they've got every reason to falsify the results because they're the people that are going to sell it. Okay, if you want to actually have a study, you have to have an adverse party or at least a neutral party doing, if nothing else, at least a check on everything. But no, all the data is their property. That's the first problem. Secondly,
where do we find people that would lie about something like that?
Well, you find them in Pfizer, and I went through this.
I guarantee it didn't come out of Kevin's class.
Oh no, Chief, I can prove that the entire thing was a fraud. So, and here it is. They said it was 30% more effective than the standard shot, because that was what they compared it against. Okay. Problem is this. That's a true statement, but it's intentionally misleading. It's the same kind of statistical trickery that they use with the COVID jabs. Here is the reality of it. Only 1% of the population among the study group got the flu at all, okay, to start with. It is true that it was about 1% for the people who took the standard jab and about 6/10, a little more than 6/10, for the people that used the mRNA one. So that is a 30% improvement.
But don't they have to pick a strain of flu to aim the mRNA
aimed them at the same build that was used by the other one. Okay, so I mean, they tried to be apples to apples.
Okay.
Okay. Now here's the problem. The reported results only included healthy adults under the age of 65. All right, now, for virtually everybody that is healthy, the flu is a serious annoyance, but it's not a life-threatening illness.
No, it's a pain in the ass, okay? Basically.
It's a pain in the ass. You get a fever and you feel like shit for a few days. Okay, guess what? The rate of people who got a fever from the shot was several dozen times that of those who got the flu. Now, it didn't kill you, but the flu wouldn't have killed you. And oh, by the way, it wasn't perfectly protective. So you traded off maybe getting the flu, 1% risk of getting the flu, for
less
than 1%. But you traded that off for a 20% chance of getting a fever from taking the shot.
Yeah, but it costs you dough. You got to pay. You have to give money.
Well, on top of that, you had to pay for the misery. Okay.
You got to pay now, for the privilege. I love it.
Now that's bad enough, but it gets worse. The New England Journal of Medicine article and the Puff piece both said healthy adults under the age of 65. There was another arm in the trial, which was 65 and older, which was not reported by the NEJM at all. It was omitted, and it was not mentioned in the Puff piece. It is on the clinicaltrials.gov webpage. And for those people, the shot made it more likely for you to get the flu and still had the same bad side effects.
How the hell can a vaccine ever make it more likely? What a horrible vaccine.
It works. It doesn't work.
It's like putting water on somebody when they're trying to dry themselves off.
No, it's like putting gasoline on somebody that's on fire. So, I mean, so the not only was it more, it had negative efficacy. By the way, there's some evidence that the COVID shots did that to a lot of people too. But the data was that in people over 65, it had negative efficacy.
Kevin, does your school have any interplay at all with healthcare for the students or not?
What do you mean with healthcare for the students?
Well, I mean, when I went to the University of Chicago, the first thing I did was give you a physical and say you're covered while you're in grad school, because, of course, they had their own hospital. I mean, do you guys, we have a much more diffuse group. Can people get health care for the school, or is it just something you don't even talk about?
Remember when we were in college, they had these student plans. So those are not legal under Obamacare.
Yeah.
Well, so
yeah, we had those. Yeah, we had those when I was in college.
But I mean, so Ivy Tech is totally new.
They're on their own for to the exchanges and for subsidies.
You guys have no infirmary, nothing like that at all.
No, we have. I mean, I can go get my teeth cleaned for $10 for our dental hygiene program. But you know the nursing school has.
That's a deal. I might drive down for that.
You know, I can go get my blood pressure taken, but no, we don't provide any care to students, any serious medical care to students, or faculty or anybody.
Well, you don't really need the Obamacare thing if you can be on your parents' thing till you're 26, right?
Well, that's part of Obamacare, but in Indiana, you could be on there till 26 before Obamacare.
Okay. What were we on? I don't even remember. What happened to us when we were in school? It was so long ago.
They had a student health. It was optional, but you could buy into it if you wanted to, and it was cheap.
It was really cheap.
Well, University of Chicago, I'm going to say it was. I won't say it was free. I'm going to say it was included. But just for the listeners to have a clue as to what we're talking about in terms of fees, when I became a market maker on the floor, we're talking 1981. First app, you didn't pay him anything. You paid commissions. I didn't. Before I traded my first option contract, they covered me on insurance for free. And then a year later, I hired a clerk who had a family. Guess the number per month. Came out of my account to cover him and his family.
What was it?
$75.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Well, so I had...
I know my daughter could get an insurance plan, but pre-Obamacare, for about $125 a month.
Well, when I was running NCS, we had people. Now, the dirty secret is that everyone's individually rated, which they try to pretend that there aren't. Then there's all kinds of rules with ERISA and everything with regards to how you do payroll deductions, because you as the employer have to cover at least half, otherwise you lose the top line deduction. Okay. So, and you can't discriminatorily charge. The only thing you can do is you can charge a higher price for family coverage as opposed to individual. All right. Now, this may have all changed because Obamacare changed a lot of stuff, but this is how it was in the 1990s. But I had people in my office that were well under $100 a month. And that was actually really good coverage.
Well, and also Obamacare and other stuff. Actually, I don't know if it was the Obamacare, but it was the insurance. I think it was having, what do they call it when the insurance companies have their own hospitals with their own deals? What do they call that? Your network?
Well, they do.
Your
they
network,
also
right?
Do yeah, the network thing. But they also, they're, now we were never involved with anybody that did this, but there were places, and there is today, especially with Medicaid, there is a capitation system that's being used by some of these state things. Advantage, some of the Advantage plans are capitated. Those are places, you know, basically what they do is they pay this many dollars per person, whether you use any of it or not. Well, you can, I think you can figure out what the incentive is for them to do to you there, right?
Well, my one of our, this is in the early 90s, we first started PTI, one of our first clients and our biggest client, guy had nothing but money, he had a factory in Columbus, Indiana, of all places, Kevin. And I think he might have had...
factories in that area. That's not an above all places. It's a big manufacturing area.
Yeah, well, it's south of Indianapolis on what river, right? It's on... Anyway, but he had a deal where... This is before the network stuff. And he self-insured his plant. And he said it was... That they hired a doctor and a nurse. They must have had 150, 200 people in this place. They bought from Lloyd's of London, I think it was from Lloyd's, the, you know, cancer. Actually, the worst. Well, actually, the worst thing that probably could happen to you. The most expensive thing is somebody with a baby that needs, like, care forever. Worse than cancer or heart attack. Heart attack's not so bad, actually, but in terms of cost. But anyway, he said that was their biggest profit center the year after he did it. Because they would have, if somebody had just like something they think might have been wrong, they go to the nurse and she'd say, oh, yeah, you got to go to the hospital or the doctor, or, oh, you're fine, that kind of thing. But anyway, he said that was his biggest profit center. But then all of a sudden, when they had a guy for an appendectomy, a guy or a lady, and their price was 20 grand and the insurance prices were five, they essentially drove everybody out of the business. You know, you couldn't do it anymore if your price was that much more than the next person's. Or God help you if you got out of state or someplace where they really raped you in the emergency room. So, you know, Carl, what you're talking about has very serious person-to-person. I mean, there's no way, even when Bob Cerrone used to be on, he said, if you got more than 200 people at your place, you have no business having a prescription drug plan.
Yeah,
but now all of a sudden that's you know, people have ways to get that cheaper too, which is even weirder. If it was all the same price, people could do this themselves is really what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it was the wars. I mean, it was an annual war that I went through, and we went through a few different companies over the time that I ran the place. You know, obviously, when I first started, it was just me, and then myself and, you know, first employee. There was no insurance. There was no health coverage. It was part of the deal. But as you get bigger, it becomes something you know, the employees kind of sort of expect, right? And
plus,
and
if it's you, you'd rather have it be tax deductible for them than after tax for you.
Well, yeah, hello.
Yeah.
You know, and you can take it off top line. So if the company is doing okay, it does work, because for everybody, there's that tax advantage, right?
By the way, the young Carl must have fixed the problem. The Spoozer up 14 and NASDAQ's up 84.
Well, I just told him to open the windows at the data center and turn the fan, get a couple of box fans and stick them in the window. And
today would be today. It's like 22 degrees.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, you know, for right now, that's fine. Now, you know, a little later when it warms up, maybe, you know, not so much.
Yeah.
By the way, you do know that data centers don't have windows, right?
Oh, they have to have doors.
Those are fire doors, and God forbid you block them open.
Really? Oh.
That was one of, we had a chiller fail when I was running MCS, and our data center was buried in the middle of the suite, had no windows, and it had two doors. However, you know, so you could get cross flow, okay, so there was a way to do that. Unfortunately, one of them was a fire door. You block that open, the fire alarm goes off. So that is a really, really serious problem, because the temperature in that room goes to about 95 degrees in about 10 minutes if the chiller shuts down.
Well, you know, they used to do that. Boy, talk about showing my age. They used to do that with telecommunications equipment.
Yeah.
My first business, what do you want to call it? I won't say boondoggle because it really wasn't. At Allied Van Lines, they sent me out. Boy, talk about ancient history. In those days, before you had cell phones, you had these 800 numbers, right? And these trunk lines and things like that. Well,
right.
The where you wanted to put your 800 number, your trunk line, and your Watts lines, there's a name, you wanted to put them all in Omaha. Because of the SAC base, because of the center of the country, you could cover more ground from there. So Allied Van Lines, of all people, had, I don't know, something like 50 outbound and 40 inbound Watts. By far, the single biggest phone bill in the country, you guys should be able to bet this, back in those days, was guess who?
Oh.
Not guessing.
Merrill Lynch.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say it had to be a brokerage. Yeah.
But they had 800 inbound lines and the outbound lines.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go out there. They wanted to put this big new, you know, whatever you want to call them. It was like a mainframe. And then you put all your stuff, your switching stuff on it. I think it was huge. It was all made out here at Western Electric. So I go out there, and I go down this street, and I go, this looks like something out of combat.
Yeah.
There had to be 30 places right in the road. It had to be 100 feet by 200 feet. Looked like a concrete bunker. The only thing it didn't have was a little window with the machine gun thing hanging out of it. And I go in there, and the place is clacking away at all this noise. Yeah. I'm going, what the hell is this? And they were one right. There had to be 50 of them right in a row.
Chief, they were all, I mean, you know, back when you had all traditional switched telephone service.
Yeah.
There were those buildings were all over the place.
Yep.
You just had to know. I mean, if you look at it, you go, is that jail? No. Jails do have windows. They're little slits, but they're windows. This has no windows.
Well,
that's a switch. Yeah, it's a switch because it absolutely must stay in one piece, and the window serves no purpose.
You think those things are still sitting there? Is it an arcade piece or what?
No, actually, a lot of them have been turned into leased cage centers. The ones that are in places that have decent connectivity have ended up as leased cage environments for data interchange. Some of the others have been torn down because they're not. Okay, I mean, there used to be one of those buildings in pretty much every little town. And now 90% of the stuff's on cellular.
Yeah, okay. Because yeah, I mean it was an education to say the least. But all right, Kevin.
Well, eventually, the place to set up your lines would have been in some very remote corner of the United States that wasn't serviced by a major carrier and had, you know, the Hooterville phone company.
The problem is that
I forget whose telecom bill it was, but all of these different phone companies, you know, and then they work like ATM exchanges or credit card exchanges where they charge each other interchange fees for traffic to run across there. And as it turned out, to encourage and make it profitable for phone service to be offered to everybody in the country, even in the most remote places, these small telecoms got a bigger piece of the pie than on their side of the interchange traffic equation than the major telecom carriers did, which is why we had all those free conference calling things before we had enough bandwidth floating around for everybody to be doing video conferencing. Right. We had all of these free conference.com type of services, and because they would set up shop in, oh, I don't know, you know, Bemidji, Minnesota, or someplace like that, and so the telecom would get a ton of interchange fees, and they would share that break with the free conference people because they would bring so much traffic to them.
Well, the amount of the telephone bills from the exchange floor when it opened in '83 were really off the chart, and a lot of those things were trunk lines. Remember those?
Where
you pick up the phone on this end and it rang on the New York Stock Exchange, right? You only went to one spot, which was even more bizarre.
Yep.
But I think the CBOE had
leased lines, yeah.
I think they had more lines than the average town of 30,000 people or something around the CBOE floor. And it was just wiring the place was an amazing undertaking. And they had stuff like if you used a Watts line, you think it's nothing. Even if you're using the push button, not the old dial stuff, they never had those on the floor, but if you use the push button, that takes up time on the line. So they had little computers, or I don't know what they were, computers, Carl. Your numbers would be stored, and then when you were done dialing, the thing would shoot them at the line faster than you could could click. So you save like 4 seconds a call or something, right? Or 3 seconds a call or something like that. I mean, were those computers? What were those things that did that?
No, it was the cute part of it is that if you've ever been inside one of the older central offices and the offices that had this kind of equipment in it, it was actually a stepper motor, and it's very similar to the technology that's in a 1970s electromechanical pinball machine.
Really,
There's one of these motor-driven devices, and then a set of relays that sends the signal to latch the correct things in order to connect what it is you're trying to do. Connect the call. It's actually kind of neat.
Hey, can we shift gears for a bit? The Bodie is what, if anything? I mean, this happened when 3 weeks ago, Carl. You mentioned something about one of the Bitcoin, I'll use the term exchanges. We don't exactly know what kind of exchange they are. It's not like an exchange that I traded on, but had some sort of a hack or an issue. And it was kind of indeterminate and kind of, you know, nobody really talked about it after that show, either us or anybody else. Yet since then, Bitcoin's lost essentially 40% of its value, 30% over from the top now, from the top. And all the stuff's looking a little wobbly. The Ethereum has lost more. I don't know about the other stuff that trades for 10 and 12 cents. I don't know who the hell does that stuff. But is there some smoke and fire here? I mean, you hear people talk about regulating the stuff. How the hell do you regulate something when there's nobody there? I mean,
that's part of the problem. Yeah.
Where do you think this goes? I mean, are we talking 20,000? I mean, if Russell said 3.5 trillion or 3.25 trillion was in there when it was at its all-time highs, well, we're down to 2 now. Now, that's, you know, $1 trillion off somebody's hide is going to leave a mark if you're the somebody. Where is all this wealth, and is there more smoke? Is there more fire here than smoke?
Well, I think there's plenty of fire. My read on this is that the recent volatility in the negative direction has a lot more to do with the IRS deciding they've had enough with people offshoring their exchange activity as a means of tax evasion, and I've told people this so many times throughout the years, I've lost count, Chief, and it's that if you think that you've pulled one over on the IRS guys, you have only done so because what you've done so far hasn't made it to the top of their list of people to go screw.
Well, yeah.
Okay. The odds are they know exactly what's going on. They know exactly what you've done, but they got somebody who's got $1 billion they can chase, and you're only 5 million, and so they've only got so many dudes, and you're just not to the top. You know, you haven't bubbled to the top of the list yet, right? Eventually, the problem is, over time, even if you stop, and of course nobody that is succeeding at stealing ever does stop, you bubble to the top of the list naturally because of the penalties and the interest that accrue on top of everything that you've done. So the number keeps getting bigger, even if you don't keep doing it. Of course, everybody that's doing it does keep doing it. So now, the IRS has now issued regulations that, starting with this tax year, all of the exchanges, if they want to be able to have any kind of connection to the United States, in other words, if you want to be able to actually get money out or put money in, they're going to have to report the actual transactions. Now, next tax year, they have to report basis. Remember when you used to have to do your own basis calculations on all your trades? Yeah, well, you know, that went away, right? That, by the way, when I used to have to do that, was a 5-alarm pain in the ass. And
we used to actually just report on stock stuff. We didn't report anything on options. You had to report. The sale parts. In other words,
the sale, but not the basis.
Well, if Kevin opened up an account at PTI and he brought in 1,000 shares of IBM, and 6 months later he sold it, we would report the sell proceeds. It was up to Kevin to match up. To match up. Hey, wait a minute. I sold it at 100, but by the way, I bought it at 99. The whole 100 is not profit.
By the way, if you didn't do that, the basis was considered to be zero.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to get these sale transactions this year, okay, that are going to end up being reported to the IRS. And then next year, the exchanges have to report both that and the basis.
But can you? I'm an idiot on this stuff. If I went and bought some, I know a guy bought like three or four of them, however many years ago, at like $10,000.
Yeah.
Now I think he's
now
just
it's
got
a ton of money, right?
But now I think he's got his own. I don't think he's in an exchange. I think he's got his own personal wallet. How does he decide he wants to sell? Who does he sell that to? And how does he get his cash out?
Well, I'm not sure how this ends up working in that sort of situation. I think there's definitely trouble here, in the general sense. And the problem, of course, is that all those people who have done this stuff, do we have trouble, right? Because what are you going to do to these guys? At that sort of a point, this is not going to be a little thing.
Well, do you think it's going to be? I'll have to explain this a little bit. Is it going to be a completed sale like a retail person or a mark to market? Now, when I say this, I got to back up and explain what I'm talking about. If you on the trading floor, if you're a professional trader,
right,
and you started the year out with your account, at $1 million, at the end of the year it's $1.5 million, and you got 9 zillion transactions. You don't have to report any of the transactions. You're just marked to market. You made $500,000.
But that's because you're a professional
trader. And you actually, by the way, can elect that as an individual.
Yeah, you can, but it's a one-way road.
Right, yeah, you can't come back.
Right.
But, I mean, when they're talking about taxing the, Bitcoin at some place, I'm sure somebody is, are they going to wait until my buddy sells his and somehow somebody has to report it to him? I don't know how that even works. Or are they going to say, hey, if you bought them at 10 and now they're at 100 and you got 10 of them, you owe us $1 million, or you got taxed on $1 million?
Well, I'm not entirely sure exactly how that's all going to get, all that's going to shake out in terms of the implementation. I haven't gotten my way through that yet.
Well, I mean, I guess until I
would imagine that if you do nothing but, trade in Bitcoin, I mean, you purchase it, you buy things, you sell things, you do whatever, and you conduct business in Bitcoin. I don't know how they can tax the basis. It's only if you liquidate your Bitcoin that they should be able to tax it, right?
At least in the present realm of things, I mean, that's how it works for everything else, right? So that's how you'd expect it to work.
Well, if the firms that were threatening years ago, and I don't know who even does this, wasn't like Burger King was going to take Bitcoin. Well, if Kevin was smart enough to buy a Bitcoin at $10,000, a whole one, and he walked in next week and bought, three Whoppers or whatever he wants to knock down, and it's, let's say it's $20, and you now essentially have to redeem, one one-thousandth of a Bitcoin.
Right.
Now, do you have to, your basis on that $20 is going to be $1, do you owe tax on 19 because you redeemed 19 of it, or what?
This gets very, where it gets really complicated is because, when you buy or sell stock, it's a share of stock.
It's right? Also on an exchange.
And it's on an exchange, yeah. Right. This is not, and so what you have an awful lot of people that have kept exactly zero in the way of the records needed to reconstruct this. In terms of figuring out your basis.
Well, can you imagine if you walked in and had you paid for your Burger King with a thousandth of a share of IBM?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, but it's currency, so it's actually, in that regard, what you're doing is you're paying not with dollars, but you're paying with quarters and nickels, which are a percentage of a dollar, if you think of it the same way.
Well, but it's...
So if I go in and I buy something in the I buy a piece of candy at the 7-Eleven for 50 cents, but it's dollar denominated, then I'm paying with a portion of my of my Bitcoin, effectively, my $1 Bitcoin.
Well, but those guys keep saying that it's a currency, but every time either the three of us talk about it, we always bring it back to dollars.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem, is that it is treated as if it is a commodity and should be.
I'm going to say it's treated as an artificial stock.
Well, essentially,
that way. But there's also people who just transact in the Bitcoin world, and all they do is they're just spending it like they would spend cash out of their wallets.
But every time you do it, though,
there's a gain or a loss involved.
Yeah, I mean, if you
right, but when we have dollars, if it's inflated or deflated, do we tax that?
Well,
no, because the denominator is dollars, and that's the definition of what makes a currency a currency, is that you pay your taxes in it.
Yeah, that's an interesting definition.
Kevin, what you brought up, you're absolutely right. I mean, if I bought a Ford and paid you in a Bitcoin, and tomorrow you went out and bought tires for the Fords that you're putting together for me, and all of a sudden the Bitcoin went up $2,000 overnight, in theory you've got a transaction you've got to pay a tax on, right?
No.
Well, you sold me a Bitcoin. Well,
more than if the dollar isn't worth as much tomorrow as it is today, and I spend dollars.
Well, that's why one is a currency and one isn't. That's my point.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I just, you know, I think there's a whole lot of people, though, that treat it. There are some that treat it like a kind of not either a commodity or a stock, but there are people that treat it that way. But there are other people who just treat it like it's a currency.
Well, okay, but
and that's how they transact in there.
Well, if you want to go all the way down the road, you're going to say a dollar is a good like any other. And what we're splitting hairs on, as we're saying, is if at one point the currency was worth 10,000 of the dollars or a Bitcoin, and now the next day it's worth 50,000. Like Carl says, the taxes are on the dollar side, not the other side. You don't get to take a tax loss on your dollars, but you got to take a tax profit on your Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, it's a fairly serious thing when you get down to it. Yeah.
Because the fact is, the dollar is the currency, and the Bitcoin isn't.
How can you really regulate this, and how can you really tax it?
Well, the thing of it is, the reason why I'm not exactly regulator Ralph, but if Kevin O'Neill, you know, has an account at PTI, and you croak or you move or something, and you don't tell me a forwarding address, and you've got $100,000 here, if I can't find you, RBC is shipping that $100,000 to the state, and you can go get it there, or your estate can, or someplace. Now, Bitcoin, you put $100,000 in there, and you lose your whatever you want to call it, your code to get into your wallet. All of a sudden, there's nobody to call at Bitcoin and say, "Oh, you got to send that to the state. That's Kevin's. That's not yours." Oh no, we don't do anything like that. First of all, there's nobody to say that.
Yeah.
You know, right. So I'm supposed to believe, as old as I'm getting, that somehow, some way, somebody somewhere is going to find a way to find all these dormant accounts and like slip them over to them. I got news for you. I got a bridge you can buy. To think that money is just going to sit there, give me a break.
It should be fun, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the big question is, since, you know, I'm managing money for people, if 2 weeks from now we're having this discussion and Bitcoin's now 47 instead of 87, is it going to affect stocks? How big has this become? Where is it localized? What areas of the world? I guess if it's a bunch of drug traders that lose money, I'll get over that. But it's usually always more than that. I mean, is there some bank that's involved in this? You can't pull $2 trillion out of someplace and not leave a mark, I don't think, is my point. I don't know where the mark is, do you?
And yes, you're absolutely right with that observation. So I guess the real question is, Well, I guess it gets back to, you know, is it a currency or is it an investment? And you know, what kind of an asset is it? You know, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But I think they have a hell of a hard time. I think there's a hell of a hard time taxing it. If you want to liquidate your wallet, then you can do it. You know, but that's not so easy either.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't even know how you do it.
If you're on some kind of an exchange, then yeah, you can. You know.
What if you bought
as long as there's a buyer for what you're selling, you're okay. But if you're independently operating your own Bitcoin wallet, and you know, then how do you liquidate it? Well, I suppose you can go to the Bitcoin ATM every day and draw cash out.
Well, that's my next point. What if my brother did this with $20 years ago? And of course, he only ended up with $16 worth of Bitcoin. The fee was like 20%. But so what if one of us was, I won't say dumb enough, smart enough to take our we got 10 grand on our Visa card, and we went to this Bitcoin thing, and we maxed out on our credit card, and now it's worth 100. What do I do? Take my credit card back and say it's me, and have the 100 grand spit out on the floor of the gas station, or what?
Perfect.
I don't know about the 100 grand, you know. Yeah, by the way, you're likely to get robbed as soon as you set foot outside the store when you do.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's that problem, right?
But how do they get you the dough? Do you give them a bank account and they dump in a bank account?
Well, if you have it on an exchange, on a register, you know, one of the exchanges like Coinbase, yeah.
And what if you don't? What if you just bought it from the ATM 10 years ago?
Well, then you'd have to transfer it to an exchange.
Okay. But how
which
do
you can do.
But how mean, do people buy and sell it before there was an exchange?
Well, you would have to. So, all right. So basically, the way it works internally is that the blockchain is a distributed ledger, and so you post your transaction to the other party, and it circulates through the various mining firms, the entities that are doing mining. When you have enough confirmations that the signatures are good, that the chase on the chain of signatures for those that transaction is good, then it's considered confirmed and the transaction is finalized.
And what does that mean? It spits out my bank account?
Well, no, it's been moved from one place to the other. Now, the thing is, if you have it, so what you'd have to do is put it onto an exchange or transfer it to somebody directly through that process that is willing to give you the cash, whether it's in money or whether it's, you know, the deposit to your bank account. Okay, the other person has to. It's in that sense, it's like a stock. I'm buying and selling it. Okay.
But I mean, this was possible before there were exchanges, correct?
Oh yeah. But the generalized issue with all of this is that because it's a distributed system, it takes time and effort, which the miners are the ones that are doing it, in order to confirm that the transaction's good, because multiple parties have to chase that signature chain and declare that it is good, okay? Because otherwise I can counterfeit them.
That's bad, right?
So there has to be, there's, you know.
Well, if it's a 10-year-old transaction, how the hell do they know if it was good or bad?
Well, if it's a 10-year-old transaction, it's in the system as having happened 10 years ago.
Okay, all right.
And it was confirmed as good at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, the one thing about blockchain, Tom, and I know I sent you some stuff quite a while ago now about how blockchain works, and I can dig something out and send it to you again. But the one thing about it is that you're not modifying any data. All you're doing is adding blocks to the ledger.
Okay,
right. Say, okay, here's what happened. So you can backtrace. You can you know, trace backwards through and find anything that happened with a coin. That's why, you know, a lot of people are using it for tracking, you know, for their supply chains. It's not currency based. It's just tracking activity with products, with supplies, with suppliers, and so on. Because you have the full transparency there. But Carl's right. Everybody who participates in the ledger, and that's a whole lot of people when it comes to Bitcoins, everybody who participates in the ledger has to validate transactions, and that's a mathematical thing that happens automatically, but it takes time, so that you cannot just say, okay, here, make this change and go. It takes some time for it to work its way through.
So somebody, someplace, somewhere, you got to find somebody who's essentially willing to wire you the money or give you a check.
Right. Okay. Well, that's right. Exactly.
And
but
at the end, somebody has possession of it, and that somebody has to be willing to give you the money.
Right. And but the gotcha on that is that it's, you know, it's not like going into your bank and cashing a check, which up to a certain point, they, you know, they more or less trust you, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you know, they have the funds availability. Now, of course, a lot of checks actually physically clear the same day, all right? They actually end up coming out of the drawer's account, you know, the person who writes it account on the same day. But, you know, but that didn't used to be the case. There was a several-day float there. There is a float with a Bitcoin transaction because until that confirmation comes back, it's not confirmed. And so, you know, I mean, it's in some ways, it's inferior in that regard to a significant extent over, say, for example, a credit card transaction, because the, you know, the Visa and MasterCard networks, Discover, American Express, well, you know, Discover's now being folded in. Once those networks are run by the issuers and the consortium that sits in the middle, once you have a confirmation back, you have a capture code back, that transaction's good.
Well, we got a dash, but I just my concern is obviously that we, back in 2007, 2008, the people that worked at Bear Stearns and had all their money in the pension fund there, they had no idea that they were on the hook for some of this stuff. I mean,
Oh yeah.
My question is, there's going to be some bank, someplace, or somebody, some company other than like MicroStrategy, who was obviously the poster child for any kind of problems here. You're going to find somebody has a problem. Going to go, wait a minute, we didn't even know they knew what Bitcoin was, type of thing. I mean, that's what you have to watch out for. Kevin, 38 points tomorrow. What are you taking?
What's the over under?
Well, I'm thinking over 38. Unless you think it's going to be a shutout.
Yeah. Well, so that means Notre Dame's going to score at least 38 if they can shut them out. I would imagine if you're looking at a 38-point spread, they're probably looking at something like 45 to 50 points, and Stanford only scores once. I don't know. You know, I'm recording the game. It's on at 10:30 Eastern. It's a night game in Palo Alto.
You're going to fall asleep at your regular time. When you wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, it'll be halftime. You'll be good to go.
Well, it'll be recorded. I can, you know, and if I wake up and I want to stay up, I can do it. But it's pretty weird because you know, usually they would make that an afternoon game out there, but it's of such low interest at this point because there are consequential games tomorrow, a lot of rivalry games that are lined up, and
What happens if Michigan wins?
Well, if Michigan wins, then you know, the Big Ten's going to be thinking they should get four bids into the playoffs.
Well, who's other than Ohio State and Indiana, and who's the fourth?
Oregon. Oregon's only got one loss.
Oh, that's right.
The funny thing is that missed kick by the Vols was the difference between this game, which is the rivalry game against Vanderbilt, and it's here. It's the difference between them actually having a playoff slot and not. They don't because of that missed kick.
Yeah.
Well, the Irish might not have one because of the missed call on that last play of the game.
Oh, by the way, that missed kick was one of those ones that you look at it and you go, what?
Oh, well.
It was one of those. Yeah, I mean, he literally shanked the ball.
God. I wouldn't want to be
Remember a kicker from Michigan a long time ago named Ali Haji Sheik? Does that name ring a bell?
Yeah.
I think he kicked for the Giants, and when he kicked for the Giants, they always called him Ali Haji Shank.
Which would be your least favorite spot? I mean, a thankless job, either a long snapper, a holder, a kicker, or a punt returner.
Oh, boy, I don't know. I'll tell you what, the kicker, though, whether it's his fault or not, it's his fault, right?
Yeah,
I mean, even if the snap's no good, but in this particular case, there was nothing wrong with the snap or the hold.
Did you watch the?
You could be a long snapper. It's a good way to make a living. Just trot out there a few times a game. They're not allowed to maul you anymore, so that's it. You know, a guy like Patrick Manley, he played for the Bears longer than any other player. And I don't know if it was 15 years, 17 years, whatever it was. He was on the Bears for a really long time, and he was great. You know, he put the ball on the money time after time after time, but he was, what, you know, a 245-pound center,
yeah,
who just did nothing but long snap, but he was worth his weight in gold because the ball was right on line. It was in the perfect spot every single time.
I got a trick, trick trivia question, Major League Baseball. And I'll let you guys go. Who has the most World Series rings? Major League player with the most series rings. That's a trick question, but go ahead.
Most World Series rings.
Well, it's just a player. You should have get it easily, but it's a trick question.
Yeah,
it's a trick question.
You're going to have a manager in there too, won't you?
A guy named Frankie Crosetti.
Okay.
He joined the Yankees in 32. He won 8 World Series with the Yankees. Between 32 and 48, and when he retired, he became the Yankees' third base coach. And the Yankees won an additional 9 World Series rings, so he's got 17.
Oh, Jesus.
That's pretty funny, yeah.
But we're named a player, though. This you should get. This is easy. That has the most.
No, that one I don't know either.
Oh, come on. Yogi Berra. He's got 10.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. All right.
I mean, that's a lot for as a player.
Well, yeah, it is.
I thought he won one as a manager too, didn't he? Or maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know if he won one as a manager or not, because that's when you start thinking of managers. But you're right. I didn't think third base coach, and if he's a longtime third base coach for the Yankees in those days, that's a way to rack up rings.
Well, you know,
he probably had a lot of overlap with Yogi Berra, didn't he?
Probably. Well, you know, the weird part. I mean, Yogi, you know, he's probably the second greatest catcher of all time. And yet the dude was, what, like 5'4", maybe 160 pounds? I mean, and he had all that power and everything. I mean, it's pretty strange. They made him tough in those days. All right, guys, have a nice weekend. I'm going to try and watch, well, in the midst of the snowstorm tomorrow, Kevin, I'm going to try and watch it. I don't know. I'll hang in there a little bit. We're supposed to start snowing tomorrow into Sunday. I think Audrey's party's been put on hold. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think
I'm supposed to travel Sunday morning, and I don't know how that's going to work out.
Anything that could get hit by the lake effect, you're going to get hammered.
Anyway, all right, guys, have a good weekend. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ is up 77, and I think these are trading now. They were up more than that, but at 10, you know, we've been up all week, so any up today is a pretty good week. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.